Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, friends. Old friends and newer friends. It's good to see you all today. I'm going to do something slightly different. I'm going to give my talk, and that'll be about half an hour. And then I've invited my friend and Dharma sister, Laura Kennedy, who's sitting to my right, for those of you who are in the Founders Hall, and she is going to talk a little bit about her practice of bearing witness and also of upcoming opportunities to practice that with her and folks at Clouds, and then offer a little meditation for us. So something different. So the title of the talk is Shikantaza and Bearing Witness. And I'm going to make the connection between those two Dharma practices and use the experience from the recent sessions that I've been at. Those are intensive formal Zen retreats. One of them was formal, the other was informal. So it's been a really memorable last 10 days for me. But before we start, how about a poem from Rengetsu, the Japanese nun and poet and potter? Mountain retreat. This kind of fits with our environment lately. The roar of a waterfall, the howl of a mountain storm. I am used to them shouting at me until morning. Mountain retreat. The roar of a waterfall, the howl of a mountain storm. I'm used to them shouting at me until morning. We had a pretty big storm at Hokyoji Zen Practice Community where I was this last week. And there was one person in a tent, and her tent was a good one. She got it at REI, I guess, and it held up. The rains just sounded like a deluge, you know. It was a regular rainy season. And the wind was really strong, too, really strong. And there was lightning all over the sky around the meadow. And she was afraid to, she thought of going to more sturdy shelter, but she was afraid to leave the tent. So she stayed put and didn't get much sleep. So, shikantaza means, shikan is like just. Ta is like to hit, in a sense, to hit the bullseye. And za is zazen. So, just sitting, or just walking, or just eating, or just chanting. Just driving shikan. Here's what Shakyamuni has to say about this. Please train yourselves thus. In the seen, there will be just the seen. In the heard, there will be just the heard. In the sensed, there will be just the sensed. In the cognized, there will be just the cognized. When for you, in the seen, there is just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sensed, just the sensed. In the cognized, just the cognized. And you will not identify with the seen, and so on. And if you do not identify with them, you will not be located in them. If you are not located in them, there will be no here, no there, no in between. This will be the end of suffering. The end of suffering. So, let me also read Katagiri's commentary in here. I'm very inspired by this book, which is why I'm talking about this today and connecting it to Bearing Witness. This book was published. It's called The Art of Just Sitting, Essential Writings on the Zen Practice of Shikin Taza, second edition. It was published 2002. So it's not new. But I've only become aware of it just recently. It's just got a lot of wonderful essays on Shikin Taza, or just sitting. So here's what Katagiri says. For 2,500 years, the Buddha's been teaching us that we are Buddha, that we lack nothing of the highest enlightenment. Still, we do not completely understand. And even though we understand, it is not settled down in our hearts. That's why we have to practice constantly. We have to practice because we have a mind. Zazen is completely different from other meditations. It's not a matter of philosophical or metaphysical discussion. All we have to do is do what we're doing right now, right here. Whatever kind of experience we have through Zazen is secondary. Whatever happens, all we have to do is to be constantly present right in the middle of the process of Zazen. That's the beginning and also the end. You can do it. It's open to all people, whoever they are. This is Shikin Taza. So, I wanted to talk about this using the experience of being at Sesshin this last week. I was at the annual Jewel Mirror Session at Hokkyoji, and then I was also at what I call a session at the hospital where I work. And they have some things in common, the two kinds of sessions. So what we do at sessions with their formal retreats, and so there's a lot of sitting, but there's also services and chanting and orioke eating ceremony and work practice and walking or kinhin. There are dharma talks and there are breaks. So these are intensives. These are chances to really see what this Shikin Taza means. One of the meanings is wholehearted. It was a word Dogen used a lot. Wholehearted sitting. Sitting with no gap. Eating with no gap. Being totally in the activity itself. So session is to study the self. To study the self, we forget the self. To forget the self is to be affirmed by all beings, which isn't like beings will come up and say, hey, you got it, you know? You got it, you did it. It's more that we settle down enough to realize that we're completely interconnected, embedded in the universe with all beings, and that we're not this big, important, separate person that we were led to believe we were. So here at Zen Center, we had a half-day session yesterday that Ted led, and Darla was there, and we do we do a retreat of some kind every month here. Retreats are really important in Zen. Retreats are a way to deepen one's mindfulness, and even to go beyond mindfulness to just being here. So they're really an important part, and the elements of them are carefully arranged to allow you to settle into silence, let go of clock time, let go of being somebody in the world, a mother, a grandmother, a worker, a CEO, whatever you are, of seeking after something, because usually we're always seeking something to improve our lives, right? We want to improve our lives constantly. And to let go of thoughts and storylines. So those are some of the things. And sesshins are really big learning experiences. We find out when we sit down and settle the self on the self, or study the self, that the subtle workings of our ego operating systems are revealed. And we get to see them. Wow. And sometimes that's not terribly comfortable. But sesshins are about, and retreats are about, stepping out of our comfort zones. Just a little bit. Stepping out. So that we can experience something that we haven't seen before. So we try to get as comfortable as possible while stepping out of our comfort zone. But we can't completely do that. We can't control everything. So we do step into our discomfort zone sometimes. So one of the ways that we see how the mind operates is that we get to see how our expectations that we have, however subtle, are manifesting. So at Hokyoji this week, we were trying some experimenting with some different ways of doing things, and we had four different doshis or teachers, so that there was a talk from someone different almost each day. Almost everyone served as a timekeeper. A lot of people were trained in to be service leaders, service doans. So there was a lot of change happening. There was a lot of change. And, you know, we really want to settle into our seat at our retreat. And I could just see one of the students when a new doshi came and all the seating was kind of rearranged and somehow his seat disappeared. I could see it on his face. The look when he came in, and it's like, where's my seat? Shouldn't my seat be there? So that's one example in a retreat of how we see that expectation that's there. And I'm going to have my place, and it's going to be there, it's going to stay there. Why would my seat disappear? So that gives us a chance to, just those little things, they show that really subtle expectation that we carry. Even if we say, I don't have any expectations, watch out. Keep doing this practice. You'll see that you do have a lot of them. So I had a lot of things going on in my head the first day. The first day of session, if it's a 7-day or a 5-day, can be kind of tough. That's when all of our mental formations are swirling around in there. And I was so happy that Dokai Georgeson gave the first talk of the sesshin, because in his first talk he basically admitted that The first day we had no talk. The second day was the first talk. He gave that talk. He admitted that his mind was full of chaos on the first day. And anxiety, that anxiousness in the pit of the stomach that we sometimes feel when we know we're going to be doing something that is really challenging. And especially when we have a role, we're supposed to make it happen. So I was so grateful to him for naming that. He said, I've done so many sessions over the years, you would think that I would not, you know, that I'd be over this feeling of anxiety. But people, I'll tell you, I don't think we're ever completely over this stuff. I think as we go along in our practice, we see subtler and subtler levels of it, that's all. And we really see ourselves more and more. We don't become like perfect people. You know, you've seen people in the Zendo. Just paragons of peace and equanimity, right? Well, you know, that's how we think we should look. But actually, inside, we may not be feeling that way. And that's okay. That's good, because it's a learning experience. It's a real dynamic learning experience. Seeing our responses, seeing our reactions, or complaining. You know, we feel this resistance. Our resistance comes up the first couple of days to having to spend a lot of time with this group of people in close quarters. And so there can be a lot of yada, 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 yada going on inside about that. A lot of complaining. Or as Tim would say, pissing and moaning. He noticed the things I remember that you see, Tim. So we could feel irritated, we could feel anxious, we could feel all our judgments coming up. And especially if you practice somewhere with a different group, I highly recommend that you practice with a different group sometimes. When I go to Hokkyoji, when I practice there with Clouds and Water, when I practice there with this sort of multi-sangha group, I see all of my expectations and judgments coming up. Like, you know, why don't they just use the air conditioning all day long? Why do they keep fiddling with the air conditioning? The air conditioning wars are something that are quite common. I remember Shohaku Okamura talking about that at one of his retreats in Bloomington, Indiana, which is a really humid place, and they have to use air conditioning. But, you know, some people are slight and thin and cold all the time, and others are wearing four layers of robes, and they're just hot all the time, and there's just this, you know, at least inside people, this is going on. The air conditioning wars. So we have to become really flexible in sesshin and retreat, and that's really good for us. It's good. We have to, our preferences are challenged over and over again. And when judgment comes up, or anxiety, or complaint, we can practice letting go of it with some self-compassion even. So I have a poem about that by Rumi, and I read this, sorry Steve, but you must know I can't completely do another whole talk. So some of this is you've heard before. This is called Guest House by Jalandhar Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. That's nice, isn't it? In Zen we say, yes, you know, invite them in, give them a cup of tea, but don't invite them to spend the night. Don't invite them to spend the night. So Sashin is also a chance, an opportunity to make mistakes. I know that may not sound fun to you, but it's really great. You know, if you have a service role in a Sashin, and it's formal, it's a formal environment, we feel like we want to do the best job that we can, and then we make mistakes. We make mistakes, and we get to see the effect on others, and then we get to let go of them. And that's big. That's really huge. Dogen Zenji said that towards the end of his life, my life has been one continuous mistake. And maybe you don't believe him because he's Dogen. Dogen is our big Zen ancestor. But my experience is that is probably really true. I feel the truth of that in myself. So this is an opportunity. As we get older, we kind of get our repertoire together. We know how to do what we know how to do, and we do it well, and we don't like making mistakes. We want to learn how to do these roles and master them, and then do them smoothly to show our progress as Zen practitioners. But actually, it is just great to be in a situation where you can see everyone else making mistakes and you make mistakes, and then you get to let go of them. And you're a human being. We learn that when we fall on the ground, we can use the ground to stand up again, to get up again. We can push up on the ground and stand back up. So we're becoming real. It's a moment. It passes. Next moment. We're flowing from moment to moment, not thinking about it, but being in it. Shikan. So after a while, the whole group begins to settle in Sashin, and the group begins to sort of move, sort of flow together in a harmony. And that's a big part of our tradition, is group practice and harmonizing with each other. And seeing ourselves as processes. Just moving. Just processes. That's nirvana. That's nirvana. So that's the meaning of Shikan, to be one with our activity, without separation, with nothing extra and excluding nothing. I want to read a quote from this book from Mel Weitzman, who is, I think, he is in his 80s now, right, Tim? He's quite a bit older than you. He's still, and me, and many of us, and he's still teaching. And he says that one of the teachings he remembers from Suzuki Roshi was, don't be selfish. And he said Suzuki Roshi's simple day-to-day activities, the way he'd sit down and stand up, eat his dinner, put on his sandals, that was his expression of Shikantaza. And I think that was also true of Katagiri Roshi, that the way he did the little things was how he expressed. He said, And just putting on your shoes is shikantaza too, but this just has a special meaning. It means without going any further or without adding anything extra. We're always doing something, making up a story about our life, and making up this story about our life today is okay. This is our dream. He said, we've been talking about the dream. Everybody has a dream. We have a dream of going to the store. Every thought is a dream. But the shikantaza, or the just doing, is the selfless activity of just doing within the dream. In other words, we move and then we rest. Life is a movement and a rest. But in our practice, shikantaza, we move and rest at the same time. Within our movement is perfect stillness. Stillness and movement are the two aspects of this life. And he says, when an athlete is skiing in the Olympics and performing an outstanding feat, body and mind have no gap. Thought and activity are one. The athlete isn't thinking about something. The thought is the activity, and the activity is the thought. But it doesn't require a highly motivated, spectacular event like the Olympics. It should be our day-to-day, moment-to-moment activity, the simplest activity. The simplest activity. So one of the teachers at Jewel Mirror was Shokin Wankoff from Romanchi Monastery, and he gave a talk. We were all using different topics. They all came from each moment as the universe, but we were using different topics. And he talked about a few lines from Song of the Jewel Mirror Awareness. And what really stuck for me, that really inspired me, that he talked about was that actually all the time life is just lifing. That's what he said. Life is lifing all the time. And we don't always harmonize with that because we are really busy all the time doing and creating and arranging things to benefit ourselves. So we don't always notice it until there's a crisis. That life is lifing, you know? It's not completely about us. So we get confused. And his example was, that I found so moving, was he talked about a man who is a vendor who'd come to Romanchi quite often. And this guy got cancer of the larynx, laryngeal cancer. And he still came out to Romanchi, but he went through multiple surgeries to restore his ability to speak, which he lost as a result of his treatment. And he, one time recently, came to Romanchi, and he would communicate by writing notes. And Shokin said he wrote a note and gave it to Shokin, and on it said, I'm angry. I'm angry. This was after the sort of last, you know, ditch surgery that did not restore his voice. And what Shokin said was that he was just there with him. He was just present. He just received that, I'm angry, you know, and nodded, I get it, I get it. later the guy was going through the books in the bookstore at Romaji, and he came to Shokan with a book he'd picked out that he said just found him, which is Returning to Silence. He said, I think that this book, there's something here for me. So that's a dramatic example, but it's what, you know, it's an example of that life is lifing no matter, you know, what we want for ourselves. So the experience of Shikhan, just being with what's arising, although it may not prepare us for something like that, at least prepares us to be present and not turn away from someone experiencing that level of suffering. So Shikantaza has helped me. It's informed my practice of chaplaincy, of responding to crisis. At the hospital where I do that, I moved from Sesshin to the hospital this time, directly from Sesshin to the hospital. And Shokan said, oh, I'm sorry, you have to do that. And I said, oh, it's just like Sesshin. It's an extension of Sesshin. So, there's a couple of ways that it's like Sesshin for me. In both, we set up the space, in a sense, a sacred space for the practice. At the hospital, a sacred space. I work at night. The lights are low. It's very quiet. And in each room I visit, sacred space is created. Right there, with a beeping machine in the background. Sacred space. It's also meeting rapid change with flexibility. It's going in with no expectations. Trying to have no expectations. Because if I have expectations when I'm doing that work, I suffer. I suffer. So I don't want to suffer. So I go in and let go of expectation about what my night will be like, what will happen, whether I'll be tired, whether I'll be able to handle it, any of that stuff. Dropping off body and mind happens in responding to crisis and applying self-compassion to what comes up for me internally as a result of what I'm dealing with externally. And the template that I've used for my practice of chaplaincy is that of the Peacemaker Order, the three tenets. And those three tenets are not knowing, and don't know mind, not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action. Those are three very helpful reminders of how to array the self. And of the three of them, I would say the most helpful has been not knowing, letting go of expectation. And that means to be in a place of wellness, of well-being, so that I can hold my Dharma position, so that I don't become overwhelmed by suffering, other people's suffering. Sometimes tears can be shed. Sometimes joy and celebration can happen. Babies are born, as well as people dying. So we can extend that way, that practice, which has been developed by Roshi Bernie Glassman, And we can extend that practice to the suffering and the misery in the world, which a lot of us don't know how to respond to. We're in tune with it. We're hearing about it a lot. And we feel a sense of our hearts ache for people in the world, people who are marginalized, people who are suffering, groups and individuals. And so this is a practice that can be extended to those situations. So I feel as a Zen practitioner and a priest that it's imperative for me to not only arouse compassion for the victims of violence, but also for the perpetrators. That's a tradition. That's in our tradition. And it's something my family really struggles with. And some of my friends. But it is part of what I do and what I feel I need to do to walk my talk as a Zen priest. So we need to look into the causes and conditions of suffering that leads to violent acts, and hatred never ceases by hatred. So I can't take sides. And forgiveness and reconciliation are at the heart of engaged Buddhism, engaged Christianity, and engaged Judaism, engaged humans. And that is action. What we actually need is not to act. There's been a lot of acting, and that's led to just more distress. What we need to do is ground ourselves through shikantaza, through stable spiritual practice, daily zazen, understanding ourselves really well, seeing our own so-called darkness coming up. So that's what's needed in order to respond in a way that's grounded in nonviolence and love, which to me is the only way to respond. That's, for me personally, the only way. So before I turn this over to Laura, I want to just teach you a little practice. It's called a self-compassion break. So when you need to meet your inner judgment or whatever it is, your distress with something, and this is sort of a quick thing you can do anywhere. You won't need to sit down on a cushion for 30 or 40 minutes to do this. So you just put your hand on your heart or some part of your body, so that you can feel your own sort of a self-soothing touch. And then you just say, this is a moment of suffering. Or this is a moment of distress. Or pain, whatever it is. All human beings experience this. May I be at ease. Or another phrase that works for you. And that's all there is to it. We can do this anytime. We can meet whatever comes up with this practice of compassion. So, now I am happy to introduce to you my good friend, Laura Kennedy, from Clouds and Water, and I'll have to hand her the lectern so that you can hear her.
you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have 10 minutes.
I shouldn't have gone on so long.
No worries. I am very humbled to be here. And I'd like to pay homage to our ancestors. I'd like to pay homage to Cloudman Village, who was here before us. And I'd like to pay homage to Katagiri Roshi and all the ancient great practitioners who practiced in this awesome space. So I just want to talk a little bit about bearing witness and then do a brief guided meditation. Where to start quickly? Yes. So I've this about 15 years ago, I read Bernie Glassman Roshi's Bearing Witness, and I was struck with the genocide of Auschwitz-Birkenau. And I realized, too, that in this country, in our state, we have genocide. We don't need to go to Auschwitz-Birkenau to experience and awaken to the genocide right here in our country. And I had a vision of wanting to do a bearing witness retreat at Wounded Knee, which was a massacre of Native peoples in South Dakota. And as life has it, the conditions that were arising did not support that vision at that time. And also, as life has it, sometimes our ideas and what actually occurs are two different things, especially if one develops a don't-know-mind and lets go of expectations and trusts the universe. In one of the other thoughts that came out of reading this Bearing Witness was in the book I met Fleet Mall. And I thought to myself, I need to meet him. He's got an amazing story. He's an amazing dude. He's come through hell and really awakened to his Buddha nature and contributed many gifts to many people. So I had an opportunity in 2012. I went to Upaya and I met with Fleet. And I said, Fleet, would you come to Clouds and Waters Zen Center and work with us? He said, yeah. So in 2013 he came and he worked with us. There were people from all over the Midwest participating, because Fleet moves from the cushion into life with shikantaza, with zazen mind. to serve and free all beings, which is the Bodhisattva vow. He taught us many teachings. And then in 2015, the gates were open for me. I went to the Black Hills and I bear witness to the genocide of the Lakota people. My heart was broken open. And then I went to Auschwitz-Birkenau again. My body and mind, my heart broken open. And then, in December of last year, I had great fear about doing a street retreat. I'm like, I can't do it. And in that moment of can't doing it, I made a decision to go to San Francisco. And I was on the street for 3 nights and 4 days. It was sealed. My mind and my heart pivoted on behalf of all beings, including myself, because I include myself in that suffering. The Bodhisattva vow doesn't exclude anybody or anything. It's beyond the mind, and it's all-encompassing. So this year, I've been working with Dakota people to do a retreat here at Fort Snelling, which is a concentration site for Dakota grandmothers, mothers, children, elders. Maybe some of you have been to Fort Snelling. It's beautiful. And it's also a place of great suffering. We're very fortunate that the Dakota people want to work with us and have been working intimately with us. It's been an honor. As part of, we'll be using Bernie Glassman's Three Tenets. And the container is very safe because the experience of suffering can be very unsettling. And walking into that type of situation, conditions, create great fear. And we want to create a container that is authentic and that takes care of people. So we are doing that. Along with, as was eloquently articulated today, the ground of being is in Zazen and in emptiness. And from that place, that's where we all arise, interconnected in this experience. It's quite powerful. The other thing I want to mention is, as a developing a process for understanding, to be able to go into this kind of experience, we're also offering a class on socially engaged Buddhism using Bernie Glassman's Three Tenets. So we're trying to create a process, an invitation for everyone, no matter what level one believes they are. It's not important. what's important is to have an open mind and the possibility of an open heart. And even then, if your mind is closed, you're still invited. All beings are invited. So, do I have time for the guided meditation?
Depends on how long it is.
Okay. So let's just take 5 minutes and let's just let go of words. Just find your seat. Find your spine. Just gently letting go. Letting go of the words. Letting go of any thoughts, feelings, sensations. Creating ease. Inviting the mind to relax, heart to soften. Just gently resting, resting in the heart.
After this, Laura's will be around if you want to talk to her about the upcoming opportunities or about anything that came up for you. So it doesn't look like we have time for much discussion. Maybe I can take one question or two. Or we can be done. Okay, I guess we've let go of words completely and thoroughly. So thank you very much.